You know, everybody always wants to know, how does Jimmy Hart get his hair to look as good as it looks?
Well, first of all, you got to use the right shampoo. That's what it's all about. You got to use the right shampoo. Then you got to towel dry it just enough to get it in shape. Then what you do, you take the blow dryer, you shoot this side up. You shoot this side up like a 57 Chevy. You bring these two sides down. Then you take the magic comb. You got to get a good comb now. And you run it through this side, you get it like you want it, and then you put Paul Mitchell Freeze and Shine on it, baby. Paul Mitchell, just remember that I've been using your Freeze and Shine for 30 years.
Because if you look good, you feel good, and if you feel good, you look good.
That's how Jimmy Hart does it, baby. I'm ready for a beautiful day today.
Baby oil, you got a little bit of baby oil. I don't know how to work blow into there. And blow. And a pocket full of blow. And my homies do too.
Okay. I didn't know where you were going.
Cha-cha-cha. I don't know. But I tell you what, it is me. It is me. The American Dweem. Big time Maddo. I'm not the American Dream.
American Dream now?
Nah, I don't know. Nope.
Can.
I'm the big O baby. And with me as always, my guy, he is going to be this week, Greg the Hammer Valentine, and my beefer.
Sweet.
Talking Nate Adams.
Ahoy, hoy, everybody. Thought you were singing that baby face song.
Mm-hmm.
You got a little bit, but I was like, I don't know what that song is.
Baby
is that
face.
A real song?
You got the cutest little baby face. Because I sing it a lot.
No, you don't sing
it
a lot.
Yeah, no, I do.
There's definitely never heard it come out of you.
One time.
Something from my childhood. That's
we bought.
From, I'll tell you that much.
The little lady and I bought a happy birthday balloon
you
for her
midget?
50-year-old cousin.
Okay.
And you tapped it. It was a giant oversized balloon, and you tapped it, and it sang that song.
Oh, my God. Why would anybody ever
baby
that?
Face.
How did that exist?
You got the cutest little baby face. I don't know the rest of the words. There's more
Thank
words.
Thank God. If you knew the rest of the words, this is going to be a long podcast.
What a rush.
Talking about pro wrestling.
Up north.
It's not depressing.
Mm-mm.
It's not a slog.
Mm-mm.
Every week,
no.
Getting through these
it's
pro
a treat.
Wrestling episodes doesn't get harder and harder. More and more draining on my soul.
You have no soul, friend.
Not starting to feel like a prison sentence that we've assigned ourselves here. Watching
countless hours.
Watching all this weekly 1980s wrestling television.
Every week that I'm watching it and writing down my notes, always around like the 45-minute mark or the 50-minute mark, my girlfriend says, "You're still watching that?" Because it seems like an eternity, one episode.
I feel bad for her.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. Really, too, when we started doing this, I kind of thought that these were going to be like hour-long episodes that would make like 40 minutes of content.
Nope.
But no, they were all like two-hour episodes, which is still like a good 90 minutes we got to sit through with this stuff.
World Championship Wrestling usually clocks in at about an hour 15.
Oh, brother.
And primetime.
Davy Crockett.
Primetime comes right in at about $1.33. So
that's a whole lot of filler right there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, watching all this 80s wrestling, back when I was originally watching it.
Yeah.
It was a lot of it was on these compilation tapes that were just showing you like all the highlights of the feud and like, you know, the big moments and like the guys you remember and not the guys you forget. When you really get down here in the nitty gritty of it and you're taking it all in how it actually came to people originally, I don't see how this shit was ever popular.
But hey, man.
How did it ever have any sort of boom period whatsoever?
If we would have had access to like the network when we were kids,
mm-hmm.
you think we would have burned out on wrestling a lot sooner, or we'd be like the age we are right now still not having touched boob?
Oh, definitely. I think I would have burned out on it. Like, maybe I got into it in like first grade. I'd say like by third grade, I would have been like, oh, God.
Not for me.
Not for me. No more of this stuff.
Yeah, I'm going to try something cool like Dungeons and Dragons.
Oh, there weren't any Dungeons and Dragons kids in my neighborhood.
Same thing.
Was, like, no threat of me getting into anything like that when I was a kid.
I found out about, like, Dungeons and Dragons, I think, when I was, like, in fifth grade or
yeah,
so.
Yeah, nobody was, like, liked, like, Star Trek.
Excuse me, the fuck?
Nobody who liked fucking, you know, swords and there were, spells. Yeah. And there were just no nerds in my elementary school. I didn't even know nerds existed until junior high, I don't think.
My older brother, like, we all did Cub Scouts as kids.
Oh, I thought you said we all did Coke together.
Yeah, I don't know. We all did Coke together as kids.
Whoa.
We all did Cub Scouts together as children. But he was like, well, he was the oldest, so he was the first to get out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And parents were like, well, try Boy Scouts. And he was like, okay, I'll try Boy Scouts.
What's the difference between Cub Scouts and Boy Scouts?
It's, you go from like a blue shirt to a brown shirt, and it's just older kids.
No, you're thinking of World War II, I think.
Could be. I don't even know anymore. But he got there, and like a lot of these kids were like, hey, let me talk to you about a show called Star Trek.
Mm.
And I was like, Ted, you got to get out of there. That's it.
I was expecting Boy Scouts to be a little less nerdy than that and just like a little more weird lame. Like I was expecting like watch like get into Boy Scouts and the kids would be like, hey, we all really like this show MASH. We need to tell you about it.
That'd be cool. Yeah, I'd sign up for that right now.
A weird like preternaturally old like
that's Hot Lips Houlihan.
Little lame men rather than just like your classic pocket protector watching sci-fi nerd.
Yeah.
Because I don't picture them like going out into the woods and starting fires, you know?
No. They're mostly
did
just...
Did you do any of that in Boy Scouts?
I didn't go on to Boy Scouts because, like I said, I got a good, you know, look behind the curtain.
Sure.
And, you know, from a very young age, I was quick to be like, nope.
So after that, do you go on to Eagle Scouts?
That's the end game.
That's if like you've got hair on your balls, but you still want to do this stuff?
No, yeah. You've stuck with it to the age of 18.
Oh, that's terrifying. I can't imagine the sort of just like twisted, non-socialized psychopaths who make it to Eagle Scout before being like, Mom, Dad, I need to quit this. Please.
Like, in all fairness,
this is terrible.
When he was in Boy Scouts, Star Trek The Next Generation was going on at the time.
Oh, okay.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no one has gone before.
I remember
STNG.
Yeah, my best friend from down the street, his old dad liked that show a lot.
Can we get a first and last name on him? Heikowitz style?
Sleepovers. That was, I'm not going to out his old dad.
No, I want the kid's name.
That was Anthony Kiss right there. He moved about three doors down. And whenever we'd have sleepovers, like, there'd be a point where we'd have to stop watching TV because, like, Star Trek was going to come on and his dad, like, fucking had to watch it.
Kids, get out of here. Yeah, I was like, cards on. Everybody out of the living room.
You're talking, like, next generation?
Yeah, that's what it was. And whenever it came on, I just, like, watched it. I was like, why does he fucking like this? You know, my friend Anthony, like, he sort of knew that it was lame, but he tried to defend his dad a little bit. Like, well, actually, if you watch a few episodes, now look at this. This is stupid, man. Yeah. This is for dorks.
Yeah.
Let's go play Nintendo up in your room. Luckily, that was getting around to the time where kids would have, like, TVs and Nintendo systems in their own room.
Did he have some good games?
Oh, yeah. He had all kinds of games. He had way more games than me. He was much more into video games, which is kind of annoying, because you'd go over there and he'd have a lot of games, but he'd be, like, real good at them because he played them all the time.
And
so
your turn,
like,
would never come.
Yeah, just, like, playing too long, or if it was a two-player kicking your ass.
This
and
is
be
boring.
Like, yeah, what a...
I'm bored. This is boring.
This isn't for me. This isn't for me, man.
Play Blades of Steel. I bet you won't beat me in that.
He beat me in Blades of Steel all the time.
Blades of Steel.
Let's spend a few hours trying to figure out how you play the Friday the 13th game.
Oh, man.
We could never figure it out.
Somebody, my buddy Longcar, you know him. He's telling me he used to whoop the shit out of Jason in
that
game.
Bullshit.
And I was like, there's no way, man.
I couldn't even figure out how you like approached Jason and did anything when Jason came around.
He's like, I knew the combination. I just knew how to like mash the buttons. I was like,
no combination.
I was like, you're just trying to impress me in the most third grade way. And as much as I respect that.
The game was finished was the problem with it. Like, they shipped it, and like the programmers still had like 6 months out before they finished the game.
No final code on it. Eventually your buttons just stopped working and Jason killed you.
That's exactly what I remember of that game. Yeah. Like, going back and forth between like two different cabins over and over.
I got the rock. I tried to hit him with it. I don't understand.
There was nothing in any of these cabins to interact with.
No.
And then eventually Jason would show up and kill you.
Yep.
It was a terrible game.
And terrifying.
And speaking of terrible.
Yeah?
I remember like maybe it was last week, maybe it was like 2 weeks ago, I don't know. We were calling that post-Starcade episode of WCW. We were watching the worst episode of wrestling television we had seen to that point.
This was...
Not anymore, folks.
This is right there.
It's Primetime Wrestling we're watching here. Primetime Wrestling episode 66, emanating from the Boston Gardens. Yeah, just bang your head against that microphone right there. I quit. This is an I Quit match.
This is the I Quit podcast.
Good Lord, 80s wrestling. I quit. This is the worst episode we've watched so far of anything.
Yeah.
There was nothing going on in here.
No. Like, five of the six matches were joined in progress.
One like 40-minute long comedy segment that got replayed from another show just to kill time.
That was the most Vince as shit moment.
We'll get into it. Let's do the rundown.
Ooh, Stifler.
Wait, did we get the check from Stifler this week? Did it show up?
Ernie Reyes Jr. mailed it in this week.
Ernie Reyes Jr. is now funding the rundown.
Ernie Reyes Jr. Martial arts superstar.
Still a promoted
Ernie Reyes
segment, the rundown
Jr.
here.
Presents the rundown.
That was very professional.
Thank you.
First match, we got the Magnificent Morocco versus Golden Boy Danny Spivey. Morocco wins that with a cradle after Spivey tries a suplex and gets reversed.
When will he learn?
Spirited little brawl between these two.
Mm-hmm.
Tony Gurria versus Mr. X, who is Danny Davis under a hood.
Dangerous Danny
Davis.
He started
doing his like evil referee gimmick. Gurria wins with a roll-up. Two exciting finishes in a row. Psycho Capone, maybe my new favorite wrestler.
Thank you.
Versus Lanny Poffo. Capone gets taken out by two Swanton bombs and a moonsault and about three body slams in a row, but barely taken out.
Barely.
Barely.
He's a psycho. You got to go hard.
This is a 1986 pro wrestling match. I did not misspeak. It was two Swanton bombs and a moonsault.
Okay. And then Jeff Hardy won.
Okay, Tiger Chung Lee versus King Tonga. A couple of big brown men just kicking the shit out of each other. Mm-hmm. Eventually, Tonga kicked to the chin. They were calling a thrust kick. I guess there was no crescent kicks.
Yeah, I was going to say, it was just a crescent
super
kick.
Super kicks or, you know.
He kicked him in a mush.
It was basically a sweet chin music, a little proto version of it, but Tonga won with it.
Mm-hmm.
Then we got a Primetime Extra. This is a new thing they're doing on the show. A Primetime Extra, not to be confused with the Championship Challenge series. That's going on over in WCW. This is WWF's version where they just play a random match and call it something like it means something. British Bulldogs versus the Hart Foundation. This match, it just kind of ended. I don't really know what happened. Neither did the announcers, quite frankly.
Or any of the wrestlers, seemingly.
The cameramen certainly didn't catch whatever happened. So everybody just theorized that maybe the ref called for a DQ at some point.
He didn't like what was going on.
Neither did I.
Look at the amount of notes on this next segment.
Coming up next is The Mating Game, which is not a pro wrestling match. It's a comedy parody of The Dating Game, hosted by Vince McMahon. The Hart Foundation and Jimmy Hart are vying for a date with a lady named Phoebe Zimmerman. Results of this, Phoebe Bales, Yolanda Jones substitutes in.
I guess we got to give the results.
She chooses Anvil for the date.
Yep.
And then we got our main event, which is Big John Studd, the man who cannot be slammed, versus Ted Arcidi, the strongest man in the world.
Yolanda Arcidi.
Goes on for a while, and then eventually a double count out ends our misery.
Mm-hmm.
That was a rundown.
Okay. Let's just get to our three count.
Also, check out Ernie Reyes Jr. as Donatello in that Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie. He did a really good job.
Yeah, he did all the...
Did a really good job working under a hood.
All the work under there. And then he later on, in Ninja Turtles 2, became Kino.
I mean, he did so good. They had to get him out from under that mask and show his cute baby face. And he was like a Rey Mysterio type.
Baby face.
Yeah.
There we go. You got the cutest little baby face.
Queuing him up.
It
could have done it.
Set him up by knock him down.
That guy would have wanted to transition into pro wrestling in the late 90s. They could have done a Rey Mysterio, Ernie Reyes Jr. tag team. And I think it would have done business.
Opportunity missed, man.
I would have done some business.
Well, because then he parlays all the wealth health and success of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2 right into
directly
Surf Ninjas.
Into Surf Ninjas.
I'm still waiting on the sequel to that.
But yeah, at that point, I thought we were at the beginning of the Ernie Reyes Jr. empire.
Holy shit, dude.
But post that, I don't know what happened.
Holy shit, dude.
What happened in your brain just now?
So they love doing these sequel remake type things, right?
They sure do. More than anything.
We make a sequel remake of Surf Ninjas where there's these young Surf
Reboot
Ninjas,
it.
Right?
Yeah.
And then, like, who is it that comes to the States but old man Ernie Reyes Jr.
That makes
to
a lot
find
of sense.
His kid.
Can we have Rey Mysterio Jr. unmasked with bleach blonde hair being their friend who is also a high school student?
Yeah. That's fine.
That sounds really good to me.
Yeah, yeah.
Or maybe
or
Rob
should we
Schneider.
Just get Rob
just
Schneider?
Just play the role again. Yeah, let's get him again.
Hey guys, it's me, Rob Schneider.
No, he's gonna be able to do that role better than him.
Oh god.
This week we're still doing the five count. I don't know, like what you thought. Like maybe we wouldn't do it because there's no way to find five things to talk about.
Yeah, I thought we were just gonna go to our three
in this dead show.
Our three count.
But we're still gonna do it, man. We're gonna power through this, and then once we get through it, we're gonna have a little treat afterwards.
You promise?
I promise. There's good news coming.
No foolings.
No fooling. Just give me your number one. We'll do this like a Band-Aid right off. Rip it right off.
I'm going to go to the only decent match in the entire show, and that was Magnificent Morocco with Mr. Fuji versus Dan Spivey.
I called that a spirited brawl. Yeah. It was a decent little match.
It really was. We've talked a lot about Dan Spivey's work the previous two WWF shows.
Week to week, it's wildly different.
I'm not going to lie to you.
Inconsistent.
I'm not horribly familiar. Well, quick rundown. The first week he showed up, he did way too much and looked awful. And then the second week, he just had a quick little squash match.
Concise.
Made him look
fine.
Great. Now, this week, they put him in there with a proven veteran. I'm not going to act like I'm very familiar with Magnificent Morocco's work. This was one of my first forays into his
he was fine.
Wrestling art. And he did a great job.
So like a lot of those guys,
Spivey,
in 80s WWF, those big ripped to shit guys were all pretty fine. Like they all could work okay. They all could at least move and bump. Whereas like in the 90s and on after that, they kept trying to get big guys. Yeah. But for some reason, the big guys couldn't work anymore. No. They just kept getting like big guys who couldn't move, like big guys who weren't athletic in the slightest. But they had a good stable of them here in the 80s. Like, Powers of Pain, Hercules Hernandez,
Hercules.
Morocco was okay. Who is that French Canadian? He was the only one that was putrid as far as moving. Dino Bravo.
Oh, yeah.
He was maybe the first just like big muscle bound, can't do shit,
can't
but Vince is still pushing him guy.
And Ted Arcidi.
Oh, yeah. No, Ted Arcidi definitely is a big muscle bound idiot who can't move or do anything.
We'll get to that.
We saw him in this match or this. Show.
Morocco, though, I was impressed, man. He worked a great heel style match, cheating and this and that, and stalling. I loved
the
stalling.
To the outside a little bit.
I loved the stalling because he said, here's Dan Spivey. Guy doesn't know how to work that well. He's the squeaky clean baby face. I'm the bad guy. They're going to want to see him beat me up. So I'm just going to stall the first 5 minutes of the match.
Sure. Let this guy chill out. I'll get the crowd like pissed off at me.
So
he doesn't have to
do
anything.
They really want to see him hit me.
And then we'll go right into like the ending sequence. It'll
It'll be fine. And it worked out great. Like I said, Morocco keeps doing the heel shit. Spivey got to do his rope running antics that he loves to do, if you've noticed by now.
Well, I mean, if you could let me play around in a wrestling ring, I'd be running around.
He's like,
I've been practicing real hard every week on running the ropes. I don't even have lines on my side where I hit the ropes no more.
Yeah, that's a nice sign of a young boy in the ring who doesn't know what he's doing. They get those horrible, horrible rope bruises. I wonder how your body, like, just decides that it's fine with that and then doesn't bruise up anymore.
Yeah, you want to see...
It's weird what humans can get used to.
This episode gave us the absolute, in terms of opposite ends of the spectrum, of new wrestlers...
Yeah.
Being able to run the ropes.
Wait, you're saying there was...
And not being able to run the
ropes. On this show who didn't know what they were doing?
Well...
That's quite the accusation.
If I take you from this bookend to the opposite bookend,
we'll get there.
But that wrestling really squeaky.
Oh, that was real squeaky. I wrote that down like every 30 seconds. The squeak in this ring, anytime anybody bumps, is driving me fucking crazy. Somebody cut that mic under the ring.
Yeah.
Cut the mic or I'm going to cut my throat.
Cut it.
I I didn't cut my throat yet, but
yet.
We're only like halfway through December. Yeah. We could get there by Christmas.
Oh, easily, man.
They always say that, you know, everybody kills himself around Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
I believe it.
Yeah. Why not?
Why wouldn't you?
Mm-hmm.
Hang yourself with Christmas lights. They're everywhere.
Oh, that's what convenient. The gremlins did.
I know.
What's his face?
Quite
his
frankly,
dog,
the
Billy's
first time
dog.
I've ever seen something get hung by Christmas lights, and I don't know why. It's not just a thing that happens all the time. And they got those like bridges that are famous for people jumping off
hey.
Of. So then like a cop's got to stand out there to like make sure nobody jumps off of it.
Did you know Gizmo?
Should be the same thing with Christmas lights.
Did you know Gizmo was supposed to turn into Stripe at the...
Yeah, of course I knew.
He was supposed to be the bad guy?
Yeah, definitely.
But Spielberg was like Joe Dante.
I like the idea.
This guy's cool.
People
Put
are
going
to want to like Gizmo.
Man, was he right, huh?
He was so right. Like, that movie wouldn't have been nearly as beloved if... Yeah. Gizmo had just turned into Spike, and then there was
like 20 minutes.
You wouldn't have got that whole like Gizmo saving the day in his tiny little toy car thing either. Which
or how about the greatest
the fun things.
Scene of Gizmo getting bullied by the mean gremlins while he's trying to play a little horn wearing
yeah.
a Santa hat,
that shit's
playing with
gold.
His buddy the dog?
He's such a
is they're bullying him,
sweet little boy, just getting bullied by gremlins.
Oh,
I imagine
man,
it's
having a nice time at Christmas. Check out Dork over there. We're playing Donkey Kong.
Yeah, quite a lot. What it was like with your little yuppie brother
yeah.
Davey R. Shyster,
Davey R. Shyster,
wearing a little Santa hat,
playing
and trying to play
dog.
Christmas music while you and Ted were just like
playing Donkey
dumping
Kong,
dumping goldfish over his head, and playing Donkey Kong,
whipping them at his head.
Oh man. No wonder he grew up so spiteful.
Summer nights.
Had to earn all those fistfuls of money to prove his dominance over his
still not buying
mongoloid
it.
Older brothers. I'm going to wear a sweater vest
every day
just to prove that I'm above them. Sweater vest every day for the rest of my life.
No matter what.
No matter what.
More happened in this match.
What? Anything important?
Morocco throws Spivey to the outside, and they have that sweet little outside
mix-up. Yeah, he went over the guardrail for a second.
Throwing him hard into the guardrails.
Chaotic.
Great barricade spot.
Finally, the
Morocco.
Ring wasn't squeaking for a few minutes because
yeah.
he was getting thrown in those barricades instead.
Morocco also hit an awesome, well, they call it the Asian spike. I know it as the Asiatic spike.
Sure, but...
I love that maneuver. Love that maneuver.
That word's got a little, one too many syllables for these announcers to remember, so it's just, I'm surprised they didn't call it the Oriental Spike.
Nothing cooler to me than just taping up one of your thumbs all the way because you're showing up saying, at some point,
mm-hmm.
I'm going to drive this into your carotid artery as hard as I
See
can.
See this thumb? This is probably like the least assuming part of my body, and I'm going to hurt you with it.
Really badly.
That's what a badass I am.
Also... We're in, what is it, the Boston Garden, Beantown.
Oh, yeah, we are.
Did you notice red shirt guy in the front row?
No, I
couldn't
didn't.
Tell if he was really ugly or handicapped.
I'm sure. Oh,
I don't know if I want to make fun of him or not.
Okay.
I was hoping maybe you would have a ruling on this.
I'd assume he was probably really ugly. It is Boston.
Right, right. Like, you could confuse.
Nobody in Boston is going to bring their handicapped brother to wrestling.
And you could confuse a really ugly super Boston guy as being possibly handicapped.
Yeah, sure.
Like, it works both ways, am I right?
I mean, all of his friends call him retarded, but he's not really retarded.
Hey,
he just looks that way.
Hey, look, it's Ricky the Retard.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Hey, you think we should bring Ricky the Retard to wrestling?
Yeah, he was really had some mental issues. I think they'd be nicer to him. It's Boston, but these people aren't
and real quick,
animals.
Real quick, before
hey,
I
leave
get,
my brother alone. Yeah. He's really retarded.
This one really is. So we don't get the hate mail. You know, we don't like to throw that word around. That's not how we talk. We're just talking shit about people from Boston. They would use that word.
Absolutely.
Low class.
Ugh.
You know my favorite part about Boston?
What is it?
Leaving it.
Whoa,
next segment. Here we go. Boom.
My number one.
Yeah, you got one.
My number one talking point about this episode of Primetime Wrestling is how many times throughout the episode they were racist against Asians. Everyone just racist against Asians.
No, I'm
during that match,
so numb to that.
Lord Alfred Hayes talking about Fuji's man's looking like he's in trouble right now. I don't think he's responding too well to it. I see quite a look of concern on his Oriental face. Said that.
See a lot of concern on his stupid Jap face.
Later on. Fuck, Lord Alfred, they got that Tiger Chung Lee match.
Oh.
Lord Alfred drops this little bomb. It's amazing that Tiger Chung Lee hasn't sought out some kind of Oriental partner. Oh, no. Gorilla said that one.
Yeah,
to Alfred.
Yeah.
It's amazing that Tiger Chung Lee hasn't sought out some kind of Oriental partner, Alfred. You gotta maybe make a go of it in the, you know, no Asian guy is ever going to make it as a singles guy.
No.
So find another Asian guy to team up with you, because no white guy is going to do
no.
it. Then after that match, cut back to the studio. First thing Bobby Heenan says is, he kicked the rice right out of that guy, didn't he?
I did not notice that one.
Oh, man.
That's crazy!
It was nonstop. Got the Asiatic spike call wrong. Just insensitivity.
Yeah.
At this whole fucking show. Like, we're used to that 80s racism creeping into what's going on in these shows, but it was all against the Asians this time, and it was relentless. So
it was a thing. It was a thing.
We happen to have anybody out there who's of the Asian persuasion and they're listening to this. I'm sorry if you watched this episode and you were traumatized by it.
Yeah,
but you know,
but don't worry,
the 80s, it was different times.
Every episode of Prime Time is like that. So
Yeah, you could sexually harass people back then, and Asians weren't real people. It was just the time. There's nothing wrong with it. It's just the time.
It's the time. What's the time?
We didn't know we should need Big Macs every day, too.
Oh, and they used to come in those sweet styrofoam containers,
yeah,
like the
it
pancakes.
It was a different time. Everything could come in styrofoam. It's fine. So when you get cool. the styrofoam, you just throw it away in the garbage. Don't have to think about it ever again.
No, you throw it out the car window because you're done eating it. You don't want to stink it up your car,
that makes
bro.
Makes a lot of sense.
Duh.
Too many people I know like got cars that smell like drive through. And I'm up there. I'm in my mid-30s, and I feel like
these
I'm getting in your
Daves
car,
I know, I
and
know.
We're peers.
These are the Daves I know.
You should be past the point in your life where your car smells like drive-thru all the time.
Yeah.
Get your shit together, everyone I know.
Like, when you're done eating that bag of fast food in your car, my pro tip to you...
Don't leave it in there?
Don't leave the garbage bag.
Life hack.
Throw it away.
That's a crazy life hack.
Throw
right
it
there.
Away.
Or, you know, don't eat in your car like sad people who are going to kill themselves soon.
I eat in my car all the time.
Probably hang yourself with Christmas lights.
I eat in my car all the time.
After putting down some McDonald's hotcakes.
I'm just thinking about gremlins every time you talk about hanging myself with Christmas
lights. Let's start
lights.
A gremlins podcast. You can get way more material out of it. It's just like a 90-minute movie. Way more material out of these thousands of hours. Of
what if we
wrestling.
Make our way to Gremlins too?
The new batch?
The new batch.
I'd want to do like maybe like a YouTube video show set up for that one.
That's
to take
fair.
It up another
That's
level.
Fair. You think we could get old face Howie Mandel? To show up
as
for
long
that.
As we kept the studio clean, I think he'd come.
Yeah, he good dude. He
I don't know
dude.
What else.
Oh no, he's like super successful these days.
And then you're thinking of super successful in the early 2000s. Now he's a has been again.
Oh, is he?
Yeah,
that works in our
Enough
favor.
Enough time has passed since that Deal or No Deal shit.
That'd be good. No, he's got other stuff.
Nobody knows who he is anymore.
I got a number 2.
You hear me, Mandel? You're a nobody.
Prove me wrong. Prove me wrong.
Okay, what's your number 2? Let's keep it moving.
He does that Bobby voice. That's funny. I'm going to give my number 2, because it hasn't been assigned, to Psycho Capone.
Oh, okay.
Nice. Just the idea of him. I was upset because that match was joined in progress.
I mean, absolutely.
So I can't give it to the match.
Because I got to understand why the announcers were already burying him before what we saw.
Yeah.
Because you know he did something totally stupid
like,
right out the gate.
There's more than they were giving us. Like, I doubt he was billed as Psycho Capone when this match aired. Were they calling him during the match? I can't remember.
They, were referring to him, but, like, they were saying it like they didn't want to say it. Like, this man, Psycho Capone, I guess he's got...
So, like,
they're
did
not
he get
gonna
a hold
give
of the
a
mic
job
or
guy.
Something?
Yeah, they're not going to give a job
you
guy a name like that.
Psycho Capone!
Let him announce himself as Psycho Capone.
Yeah,
like,
there's more of a story.
Something
there.
Was going on here.
They're making fun of somebody.
I know for
it's
sure. I was trying to find out what was going on here. This guy was a student of Killer Kowalski.
Okay, just like Triple H.
Yeah, guy they brought in because he's a local to Boston. And essentially, you know, this match went nuts and he didn't cooperate whatsoever. And
no.
He was never, I don't think he ever wrestled again. I think this was it for him. He just went in there and took mad liberties with Lanny Poffo, and that was that.
Super punk Lanny Poffo. It's like, you're not going to make a name out of me, fine sir.
This match
and
fell apart.
Whipped him.
Yeah. Started laying stiff shit into him. Stomping the back of his head for real.
Yeah.
Like just against the mat, just stomping his head as hard as he could.
He did that spot where like, yeah, they had their arms tied up, and like he extended his leg out all the way and pushed his foot like into his face.
Nice. It was like a standing split where he was just like pulling his arms and pushing his chin back.
Yeah, he wasn't holding back on that one.
Yeah, so anyways, this was my number 2 as well. It was going to be my number 3, but we'll swing it around to my number 2 because just, Yeah, Psycho Capone tried to get way too much shit into this match, kept shrugging off Poffo's offense, kept doing offense when he wasn't supposed to, just totally took over this match, and everybody was
stunned
and shocked.
He was so
And it was
cool,
great
man.
To watch. The announcers were just burying the shit out of him.
I want to see so much more out of him.
Poffo got so mad. At the point where he threw him out of the ring, and then he was going to like beel him back into the ring. And instead, he just reversed it and kept kicking Poffo in the gut through the ropes. Like, and then he tried to drag his eyes across the rope. And at that point, he was done selling. Like, Poffo did not like sell the eye rake at all. And was just like, I'm bringing you back into the ring, and I'm ending this now.
They like walked 3 or 4 feet in that position there. And Poffo was just like, you know what, friend? No.
What was this guy thinking? That he was going to like show up as a job guy and like.
He doesn't think he's psycho.
Show everybody how tough he was, and they're going to be like, all right, make him a main eventer.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah, sure.
You've watched a lot of wrestling.
I've seen tons of it.
Was Psycho Sid ever thinking about anything?
No, he was thinking about like giving people fist bumps.
Well, duh.
That was probably about it, though.
All Psycho Capone was thinking about was getting himself over.
Yeah, legit psycho. Like, this is my new favorite wrestler. So psycho that he's...
And he looked great.
Doesn't even know the wrestling is fake.
He had, like, gray tights with the black trunks over him. And just that blonde
hair. So then we get to the end. Poffo slams him. Gives him a swanton bomb.
That was the sickest finish in all of 80s
wrestling.
Guy's not
going to stay down for a pin, so Poffo slams him and then gives him a moonsault, and then it's like, okay, now stay down, dude. Dude kicks out at 2 like a psychopath. Fucking Poffo is pissed off. Drags him to the other end.
Poffo grabs his hair as if he pulled him up on his own, and the announce team like tries to cover, like,
drags him by the collar.
He's not done with him.
Slams him. Yeah, they try to act like Poffo pulled him up. No, this guy fucking kicked out.
Yeah.
Slams him again.
I had to go back because I was like, wait, no, that's not what I just saw.
Gives him a springboard swanton bomb, and then the dude still tries to do like, I just barely didn't kick out, like right at 3 thing.
Like, not only that, like when Poffo...
After kicking out twice to these huge moves that nobody even does in the 80s.
Poffo does those first two, and then drags him to the other side of the ring for the springboard senton.
Oh, man.
And that look he gives, like right before he does it, like he nods his head like, you fucking paying attention? Yeah. Like...
All his cheesy smiling was gone, and suddenly Poffo was all business.
And, like, all 3 of those moves, like, he makes no attempt
catch
any of the mat.
Him.
Like,
he's just shoulders
like, square against that
right
dude.
On the sternum.
it's impressive.
Psycho Capone, you're an idiot.
You're a superstar, sir. I tip my hat to you. He's knocking on the doors of Street People USA.
Mm-hmm.
If we had a larger sample... of his work.
If we could find out what happened to him after he never had a wrestling match again, after probably his 3rd wrestling match or whatever this was.
God, he was cool.
I'm sure it wasn't pretty. I'm sure it involved the streets.
Like, did somebody give him, like, that bit of advice? Like, hey, go out there, go into business for yourself.
Whoever was on the roster.
Dude, that could have been a rib.
Whoever was ribbing. Because,
you know,
like,
they were
kid.
All like, he's wrestling that flamer.
They're trying to make
Lanny
you job,
Poffo.
But you don't want to do that because then they're going to think you're a jobber.
That guy's clearly gay. You going to lose to him, bro?
Go out there and oppress him. If you let Poffo beat
in your
you
hometown?
Up. If you let Poffo beat you up, they'll never let you wrestle again.
There's no other way it went down any other way.
I don't know why we were saying in that dumb voice we should be doing it in fucking Davey Boy Smith's dumb voice because, you know, he was the one doing it. It was him or Dynamite.
You gotta go out there and you gotta get in some offense for yourself.
They were, you know, probably abusing their dog by feeding it beer or something, and that idiot walked by and they're like, hey, let's fuck with this guy. Let's fuck with this right cunt.
Oh, what do we got here?
Oh, Bulldogs.
Oh, boy.
So, yeah, that's got to be my number 2 as well. So I'm going to go into a number 3.
Do
I'm it. Because I'm going to take it back a little bit to a previous
take
match.
Take you back.
That Tony Garea match. Tony Garea is way too slow, way too old. He's behind a step, and he's way too blown up to be wrestling. The announcers just have to keep mentioning it because it's so boring to watch, and it's so clear, like, spots are getting bungled because he's not in position because he's too
slow. Talking about how gassed he is.
Brain, when they come back, the first thing he does is just have some sort of, maybe it's time he retires and starts parking cars in the back is what Brain said. But anyways, all of him just being too slow and it being obvious and them having to announce it led to an amazing story from Gorilla Monsoon on commentary, where he's talking about how winded and out of it Gurry is in his match, and he's trying to make a storyline out of it. Whatever. So he starts talking about a time
he wrestled Bruno Sammartino,
and he got so dehydrated in the ring.
Well, hold on. Set it up now, because he held two very important distinctions in the WWF.
What were they?
One was shortest match ever, where he was beaten in 7 seconds.
Right.
And the other was longest match in WWF history, which you're alluding to.
There were no water breaks in wrestling.
1 hour and 32 minutes, I think he said.
Oh, man, I didn't pay attention until he started saying the weird parts, apparently.
Yeah.
So then he was saying he was so dehydrated, he had to start licking the sweat off Bruno Sammartino's body in order to be able to finish the match.
He had to rehydrate himself somehow.
And then he said that Bruno thought that he was coming out of the closet, maybe. But no, he wasn't. And there was nothing weird about it. He was just licking the sweat off another man's body to rehydrate himself.
Now, this was...
That's an insane thing to say, man.
But this was, of course, after they tried killing time by talking about Lord Alfred Hayes going out with Elvira. And they made four forced old man tit jokes.
Sure, sure.
Like, oh, it's cleverly veiled. What am I talking about?
Hayes, well, she had two. Randy.
She had one or two points she wanted to get across.
That's pretty funny.
Waka waka.
They're her big fake boobs, I bet.
Yeah, probably.
That was the points. A lot of time killing during that match.
She's just got giant boobies.
Have you seen her lately?
Yeah, she looks great still. Yeah.
She's got the same boobs she had in 1985.
Yeah, she's got really good jeans, bro.
Okay, is that what that is?
She might have them touched up over the years.
Either way, if you gotta talk about all this shit and just kill so much time because the match is so bad, just cut the match, man.
Because it's Mr. Not like this is a live X show. Worked a headlock for 3/4 of
this
the
ain't
Joined
a live show.
In Progress
You're just
match.
Putting together old matches from house shows and presenting it as a TV show. You don't have to include it, everything.
And then Mr. X did that Brian Pillman springboard splash.
I might have had my face buried in my hands when that
you
happened.
You probably did.
You got a number three?
I don't know. Did I already talk about three things? No, I talked about two things.
We talked about two, but then we shared two.
Oh,
so
third.
We can have another three.
That's probably yours as well. Hart Foundation versus the Bulldogs.
I don't really have anything to say about
it. It wasn't
that.
Really good, but it happened, and it was two good teams, and they moved around really well for a minute and a half.
They pretended like they were going to have a match, but then the match just ended.
But it was just fun to see them for a minute.
It was fun to see them just laying into each other for a minute, and it was shocking to see. They didn't announce where this was coming from, I don't think, because this is the primetime extra.
Yeah.
So this was not from the Boston Garden,
it was
clearly,
not. Because,
God, it had to have been fucking Phoenix or Miami or something, but this crowd was just the most summertime, on vacation crowd.
Yeah.
Everybody just wearing pastels and white and I don't know, the lights in this building were so bright that it looked like it was an outdoor event. Everybody just white tank tops, bright pink shorts, sunburns. It couldn't have been more jarring to go from that ugly, dreary Boston crowd to these fucking yokels.
Old red shirt.
It was weird looking. It was weird looking.
You had two things that I really loved in this match that happened.
Mm-hmm.
I've just become a huge fan of Bret Hart's heel work over the weeks. He does one of my favorites where, he starts some kind of shit, but then quickly brings the ref into it and be like, they're trying to do stuff, man. Take care of that. And in this one,
fucking tattletale.
He does some kind of move. Ref's checking on a Dynamite Kid. And so he takes the liberty to walk over to Davey at that point and spit directly in his face, which, of course, Davey Boy Smith gets all riled up.
Yeah,
and as soon as he reaches over the rope, Brett's like, hey, ref, take a look at this guy. He's trying to cheat. That's good
gross.
Stuff. That's good stuff.
Brett's spit is stinky. I don't want that on me at all.
Brett spits at a lot of people. He's kind of a dick that way,
definitely
huh?
Definitely is.
That's, you know,
that's what they do up there.
You know, that's the day I lost all respect for him.
The day he stopped spitting at people.
It was the day I lost all respect for him. And the end of the match.
Stopped spitting and started putting his sunglasses on little kids' heads. Ugh.
The end of the match where the Hearts think they have won the match.
Mm-hmm.
And they hoist Jimmy onto their shoulders. And then as soon as the ref's like, nope, you didn't win, they just...
drop him.
Completely drop him, and Sack Jimmy just shit. Sells it like a champ, man. Like, he takes a great little bump. Yeah, that's good stuff.
You'd think from that little bit they did at the end there that maybe these guys are funny. Maybe if you put them in a situation where they were doing some comedy, they could thrive. Boy, would you be wrong.
Really?
Must have been a fluke occurrence right there. We got a number four here.
Yeah.
And it's going to be that goddamn mating game.
So, but you have it because you don't like it? I'm confused.
Oh, man. Like, Fuji Vice was bad, and it went on for a really long time. Cool. But at least that was, like, kind of scripted, so, like, made a little bit of sense. This is just, like, these guys trying out their improv comedy chops.
It was great, and they were all really good at it.
Oh, man. Vince is hosting. Hart Foundation, Jimmy are the contestants, and clearly none of them have been given any... just direction as to how to be funny or what their characters would do to be
Vince
funny.
Wasn't telling them how to be funny because I think Vince knows.
I really wish he would have because I think they would have had a lot more just like booby jokes, like Elvira type joke things in there instead of just random nonsense where Jim Neidhart was just talking like he was a priest for some reason and then Bret Hart was just tripping over his words.
Yeah, he's never done that before.
I don't even know what, like... Jimmy Hart did okay.
Jimmy Hart kept doing that bit where he's like, together. I'm going to say something really, really vulgar, and then last second be like, no, that's not what I'm talking
myself.
About.
Stop myself? Yeah, at least see, like, he had a direction he was going in. Those other two just fucking jacked up jock idiots were, it was just like, you have, like, you know, those little, like, pep rallies or whatever in high school, and you get, like, the idiot meathead football players out there putting on a skit or something.
They're doing a lot of inside jokes.
Yeah, and, like, they think whatever they're doing's funny, but it's just, like, inside jokes that happen during their practice at, like, football or whatever, and, like, the whole rest of the school has to sit through it. You don't let the athletic people try to be funny. And
no.
Man, you don't let it go on for this long.
Except for this time around, in which you do let it happen, because it was great.
I'm from Calgary, and my nose is always running,
so I
I've always got to lick my nose.
This is Brett trying to...
I'm grown up now. I can lick my forehead. So if you translate to what that means to your pussy...
Oh, man.
I'm going to lick the shit out of it.
Trying to seduce a woman by talking about licking, and he starts talking about all the snot that runs out of his nose in those cold Calgary winters.
If you want to equate... the snot that comes out of my nose to the snot that runs out your pussy.
This chick playing.
Vince McMahon. Bret Hart's going to lick it.
This chick with the pussy snot, Phoebe Zimmerman. Where do you think they got her from? She was leaning into her part, man.
I tried.
This was some like local theater.
I tried to bing her.
Making my moment acting.
I tried to bing her.
Yeah, I couldn't come up with no Phoebe
Zimmerman
or anything.
I'm sure all the guys in that skit binged her that day.
Oh, man.
But I tried to.
Backstage.
And, I couldn't find any information. You kind of left out some of Vince McMahon's great comedy lines when he was introducing.
I knew that you'd probably have all of this written down.
Yeah, he was introducing the three contestants, and he said Jimmy Hart. I don't know, he said a bunch of bullshit, but the best line was that Jimmy Hart has the largest collection of hush puppies this side of the Philippines.
What does that mean?
They hate Asians.
The hush puppies? Is there a hush puppy stereotype? I never heard of a Philippine.
I guess they wear them there.
Oh, I was thinking like the side dish out of like a
fish fry. No. He's talking like hush puppy, like penny loafer type deal.
Is a shoe called a hush puppy?
Yeah, yeah.
Ugh. See, I was really confused.
They're those like rock and roll 50s loafers.
Oh, that makes much more sense. Yeah. But still the Philippines
I've
seems really random to me.
Around a lot of like Filipino conventions.
Absolutely.
And stuff.
Yeah.
And I've seen a lot of barongs, but I can't really remember.
Nobody doing like a 1950s rock and roll throwback.
Not too many people with hush puppies.
In the vein of a Jimmy Mouth of the South Hart.
Yeah. And then number two, Bret Hart. Vince went out of his way to talk about how boring he is.
Mm-hmm. Boy, was he right.
Spice things up by saying that Bret Hart holds the record for most unpublishable letters sent to the Playboy magazine advice column.
I didn't hear that one. That's kind of a good dig.
Yeah.
Kind of a good dig. It's probably true.
And then he didn't.
Weird pervert, I'm sure.
He didn't really say anything important about Jim Neidhart. But there was the booger eating. Brett declared himself the All Night Express. What else happened? Anvil
there was
said,
the part where Brett also, when trying to talk about what he would do to seduce the
woman,
wrote
that one down.
Said that he would knock her out with a sleeper hold, drag her upstairs, and rape her unconscious body.
He said ravish.
I heard rape.
He
I
kept
don't know.
Using the word ravish.
I guess I
ravish.
Just jumped to rape after I hear about knocking a woman out with a sleeper hold,
yeah.
dragging her unconscious body yeah. somewhere, and then doing things to her.
Yeah, my exact notes were, Brett wants to choke this girl unconscious, take her to his room, and ravish her body.
So, you know, Penthouse Forum, I got a question here. Whenever these girls are waking up after I knock them out to sleeper hold and drag them into Stu's dungeon and have my way with them, they always seem like they got a real chip on their shoulder, you know? And,
that's the moment I lose all respect.
I just want to know, like, how do you, these days in the 1980s, you know, take a woman out on a nice date and just have her treat you with respect throughout the whole situation so I don't got to lose all respect for her by the end of the date and, you know, kick her out into the Canadian wilderness instead of giving her a ride home.
I take her to my ma's house, Helen. She cooks her up a real nice Alaskan cod dinner.
We were having some back bacon. We were having a good time and,
that's when I choked her out and I took her upstairs to... Well, I took her to Bruce's room because Bruce is out of town and he's got the bigger room, you see.
Like you do. I was trying to be a gentleman, eh?
Then I ravished her body and then she comes to and she's all like, you know, that's the day I lost all respect for you, Brett. And I'm like, no, no, no. You see, I don't respect you.
Take off, eh?
You know, it was definitely Vince's idea.
All of it.
The one that he goes to is one of his go-tos. Putting that gross mole on Yolanda Jones's face.
Oh, yeah. So, anyways.
And Jim Neidhart's got to go out on a date with her, but she's got that big gross mole on her face.
Yeah, they come back from
good stuff.
From the break, and they're like, well, Phoebe's going to pick a winner
from
now.
From the break, because this segment lasted through a
through
break.
Through a commercial break. So, they come back, and they're like, he's like, oh, Phoebe, oh, who's gonna put their Johnson inside you? And she's like, I'm not picking any of these morons. To which all three of the men are just flabbergasted.
Instantly start calling her a
Jimmy
dog.
Hart, Jimmy Hart yells, oh man, what a real bow wow. What a real roar. Which was great.
If horror movies have taught me anything, it's that if a woman rejects you or disparages you in any way in the 1980s, instantly call her a dog. Don't think.
Yeah, immediately.
It's like stop, drop, and roll. Just like, a lady says something, call her a dog. Call her a dog.
Yeah.
Don't think about it. Call her a dog.
Not like call a woman.
Start making woofing noises.
Yeah, don't call her like a bitch. Like
No, it has to be in those words, a dog.
You're just a real dog.
Gonna bring calling women dogs back.
Also, did you notice how many times while talking to the young lady, Jimmy Hart kept calling her man?
Which is... hilarious.
I'm going to tell you, man.
How much he calls every man he's talking to darling when he's talking to this lady.
Yeah.
He's calling her man all the time.
Like nonstop.
Jimmy Hart's got some real confused ideas about gender issues.
He's got some kind of downstairs mix-up going on.
Yeah, he was very progressive.
Somebody was mixing around the gender roles on him at a young age.
Excuse me, darling. But how do you identify?
How do you identify? That's right, daddy.
What happened here? So, yeah, Yolanda Jones subs
what
in.
What happened here?
She's got the big mole. Anvil ends up winning, like you said. And that's what it, when it all, like, came together to me.
Mm-hmm.
This whole thing had to just be a rib on some, like, fatty that Anvil plowed one night.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Like, he must have just
caught wind of him leaving with the woman. And she's like, look at her.
Look at her. She's a
dog.
She's a real dog.
Anvil's got no scruples.
Like, that's... That's the only logical explanation.
Yolanda Jones, maybe she was a dog. They shouldn't have been saying that to this Phoebe. I liked her. Great
Phoebe
rack on that
great.
Phoebe.
Oh,
great rack on that Phoebe.
Phoebe was an 80s bombshell.
I would look her up and take her on a date today.
Yolanda Jones, I don't know where they found her, but she was doing a great like Wisconsin, Minnesota mom gimmick.
She was doing also some
acting. Thought, you know.
Is that a wig, or do you think that was her real curly brown or blonde fro?
I'm going to tell you right now, I talked to Anvil. Mm-hmm. Let's just say the...
You get that wig off
drapes
her?
Did not match the carpets.
That's always a disappointment. Yeah. At least there's carpets, though. Yeah. No bigger disappointment than when you...
Hardwood floor.
step into a new rental and maybe just ripped all the carpet out of the whole thing. Never want to see that.
What's this, Pargo?
Get out of here.
Get out of here.
I'm going to assume that was your number 4-2. There's no way you were not going to talk about the mating game.
I don't know. Yeah. No, I was going to talk about it.
Let's move on to our number fives.
There's only one option, I guess, and that's that RCD John Studd match, unless you got something else.
Oh, mine was just when the Boston crowd starts chanting bullshit at the end of the match. Yeah. That's my number five. Because this whole episode was bullshit.
Yeah, I'll give it to John Studd for trying to protect RCD at points and like trying to make him look like a wrestler.
Didn't protect him. The announcers.
Yeah.
All just started talking about how weak his shit looks.
Well, maybe he would have knocked him down if his blows were a little stronger.
He knew
there.
How to get some leverage, is what they kept saying. If you knew how to get some leverage on those blows, maybe they'd be effective.
They had whatever spot that was where he takes like a couple shots and he's supposed to like bump backwards over the top rope and his dumb ass couldn't like get over the rope. And Stud had to like just shove him the rest of the
man
way.
Man cannot reach down and tie his own shoes, clearly. He's so muscle-bound, and they're trying to have him bump over the top rope.
As Heenan pointed out at the very beginning of the show, the man successfully completed 250 sit-ups underneath a Chevy. He's short.
I'll give it to Big John Studd for getting that man who can't be slammed gimmick over, because that one point when RZD had him up in the... got him up in the air, but then he grabbed the top rope and got out of it.
Crowd was hot.
That crowd went insane thinking they were about to see him get slammed, so they're into that.
Yeah.
That shit at least is on fire. But then, you know, this terrible, terrible match.
But yeah. You'll
ends
notice
in a double count out.
You'll notice I wrote that down too.
In 1986.
Bullshit chant.
That's not something you hear very often back then.
Like, man, this is 86 and there's a bullshit chant.
Salty. Boston assholes. They were not having it, and they were right.
The only thing they were missing?
What was that?
Come on.
Mm.
What would have made that event a little more complete?
Throwing garbage?
A boom. And that right
it's
there,
Boston.
Folks.
You know there was plenty of garbage laying around in the row.
Everybody pick up your garbage and throw it at the ring.
Yo, this whole match sucked, and this whole card sucked. Pick up your garbage.
Everybody throw your garbage.
I want those Dunkin's containers over there. Throw them in the ring.
How many cups of Dunkin' you got? Throw them. All of them. That's all they were missing.
You should have thrown some garbage. I'm throwing some garbage.
I'm going to tell you.
Metaphorical garbage.
You're throwing.
I happened to sit through this episode.
Ooh.
Throwing garbage at you, Vince McMahon of the 1980s.
I tell you what. Mm-hmm. New gimmick. Throw your garbage. You get to pick one thing every week.
Oh, wow. That's nice.
You want to throw your garbage here?
Where are you throwing your garbage at?
Where are you throwing your garbage?
Oh, this is definitely something I'm going
to
keep up with.
That's how we can end the five count to make it more exciting for ourselves. Where you want to throw your garbage?
Who are you throwing your garbage at this week?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'll throw it the same place they should have thrown it at this double count
absolutely.
Out finish.
That's a unanimous decision.
At the end of this
shit. Here you go. So, out of the fiery ashes of what was WWF primetime June 2nd.
I didn't get the date.
Yeah. We get the Phoenix that is Throw Your Garbage.
Throw Your Garbage, a new addition to the
new
show.
New addition. We're doing it.
Now we're going to go back to an old addition.
A treat?
Take a break here.
You said a treat?
Here, a list from some words. From a list of our sponsors, and then we're going to do that old edition, that three count.
Three count.
Gotta love it.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Bring home all the action. You'll get more satisfaction when you bring home all the action.
Get a grip. Get a lock.
Get a hold on everyone. You'll have all the thrills, all the fun. Bring home all the action.
And now the WWF Superstar.
Bring home all the action.
From LJN.
When I say sharp.
Copiers.
When I say sharp.
Computers.
Sharp. When I say sharp, I mean...
Calculators.
I mean...
Fax machines.
I mean...
Typewriters.
I mean business. When I say sharp, I mean business.
From sharp minds come sharp products.
When I say sharp, I mean business.
Friday on The Incredible Hulk, David is blinded in a military accident when a top brass cover-up backfires.
Then, on the Dukes of Hazzard, Uncle Jesse lands in jail when these beautiful strippers take it all off. And on Dallas, Pam's job takes her to Paris while someone else takes care of Bobby. Friday, it's an evening of excitement.
Everybody, raise your hands, clap your hands, move your feet, shuffle around. It's the three count.
Everywhere around the world, we're gonna do a three count. Pretty good, pretty good.
Pack up the babies and grab the old ladies, cause everyone goes and everyone's something. Hallelujah.
I don't think I've ever heard anybody sing that many Neil Diamond songs in a row.
Hallelujah. I know some. I know some.
You know, there was at least one Neil Diamond song that they played at the Celebration Station, the local sort of, not low Brown rent, because Chuck E. Cheese itself was low rent, but sort of Chuck E. Cheese equivalent that we had locally. They had a band that was led by a gorilla instead of a mouse.
Mm-hmm.
They had a really, it was just Coming to America is what they did, now that I think about it. Had a really sexy feline lady named Priscilla Purr that played the keyboards.
Misconception.
Gave me kind of a boner when I was a kid.
Chuck E. Cheese did not lead the band. He was never really in the band. Fats the Gorilla was the keyboard player and kind of band leader for the Showbiz Pizza Band.
Band? Okay, because, Showbiz Pizza and Chuck E. Cheese merged at some point.
Did they?
Yeah, so I think Chuck E. Cheese was the band leader, maybe at Chuck E. Cheese, and maybe it changed once they merged with Showbiz. And
I don't know. Back where
Chuck
I grew
E.
up.
Just became the MC.
Back where I grew up,
the
Chuck
Gorilla
E. was
played
never
drums
in
at Celebration Station.
Oh, they had a surf dog that played drums at a... Oh, no, he was an astronaut.
Surf dog, speaking my language.
He was an astronaut dog.
That's a little weirder. I don't know if I can wrap my head around that.
I think a surf and polar bear that played guitar or bass. And then there was Billy Bob the Bear.
Remember any of the playlist songs they were playing at this joint?
No, not at all.
Definitely at our local Celebration Station, they had maybe four or five songs. One of them was Everywhere Around the World, We're Coming to America. And they would go into a little Christopher Cross,
They do sailing?
Takes me away to where I'm going.
What fucking 5-year-old jacked out of his mind on sugar wants to listen to sailing?
Well, they had to bring it down for a minute.
I guess so.
Because you eat your pizza then, and right before dessert came, they go into a little, who put the bump in the bump, shabump, shabump, who put the rang in the rang, ding dong. And then, everybody would just be losing their shit again. I think there was probably one more. It was probably just them singing happy birthday to whoever. Yeah, it was just the birthday song. They do a full to all the kids who were having birthdays that day, which was always quite a few from what I remember. Either way, the Celebration Station, like I said, not really low rent because their arcade was gigantic.
Yeah.
Like the Chuck E. Cheese arcade was just a little fucking nothing. It was mostly about ball pits and shit. This was mostly about arcade games. So you'd be playing that Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle, six joystick cabinet thing or whatever. Like everybody, that was the X-Men one. I think the Ninja Turtle one only had four joysticks.
Yeah, only four turtles. You're talking about the three-screened six X-Men.
Ooh, that was
cabinet.
But that was later years when that thing got. That's when I was going there when I was like a teenager.
Cyclops, Colossus.
We weren't eating pizza.
Wolverine.
Watching
Nightcrawler,
the show anymore.
Dazzler.
That's five.
Who am I missing?
That's five.
Colossus, Wolverine.
Was it Rogue?
Dazzler, Nightcrawler. Storm.
Storm!
Mystic of the Elements.
All good games.
All good games.
I think my final memory is of playing video games in an arcade was like when they brought in Virtua Fighter. And it was like, it almost looks like 3D. This shit's blowing my mind, man.
If there's one video game I want to remember, then I want us to buy the cabinet of it one day.
Yeah.
It's Aerosmith Presents Revolution X.
Wow, I never actually played that game. I always assumed it was pretty bad.
No, it's pretty badass.
There's a lot of sweet rock music playing in that game. I remember, though, whenever you'd walk past it, like it would be blaring some fucking...
Yeah, because that was right when Get a Grip came out, pal. This was Get a Grip era.
Oh, yeah.
They're doing a little... Eat the Rich. But do you like to rock and roll?
I do like to rock and roll. I like good music. Get me up on my feet, make me feeling emotions.
Do you like American music?
I like American music. In this three count. We're doing best entrance music is what I'm saying, man.
Best entrance music.
1980s, you had some iconic entrance music. There was a lot I wanted to put on this three count.
I know.
A lot I had
I
to
know.
Leave off. There's it a, was killing my babies here.
We consider ourselves, I don't want to say aficionados, but definitely music connoisseurs.
I definitely consider us aficionados and connoisseurs.
I don't want to sound like a
we're
dickhead.
We're aficionados.
We're aficionados. We like Dido, you know. We,
I love
we're
Dido.
Into stuff.
And not that fucking
there
song with Eminem.
There will be no white flag reminder.
I don't want to just hear Dido's fucking hooks mixed into a rap song. No. Give me her sweet, sweet choruses.
Dido.
That's where the emotion is.
Ooh.
I want the verses and the choruses.
Ah, let it play out.
Lover, lover, lover. We're not here to talk about Dido, though. We're here to talk about the 1980s when Dido is just a, you know, little girl running around not knowing that she was going to become an icon.
Just a young Dido.
What's your number three best entrance song of 1980s pro wrestling?
I'm gonna give it. It's a Jim Johnston classic.
Okay, I had to throw a Jim Johnston on my list.
It has lyrics in it.
Oh wow!
Sung by the performer himself.
Impressive.
I'm going Slick and Akeem's Jive Soul Bro.
Jive Soul Bro. That was a Jim Johnston composition right there.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's written for a long time.
Well, I met this lady and I told her quite a story. Said I love her forevermore. But the trouble is I tell the same old story to every girl that walks through the door. This is the slick start talking at your honey. Yeah.
Oh, I knew he was doing stuff back then. He was very versatile. And back then, you know, they had some other fingers in the pots. It wasn't all Jim Johnston back then.
I
want to
say
like in the 90s,
like,
it was all Jim Johnston.
Yeah, I think there was like
Jimmy Hart was doing a lot of shit back then.
Jimmy Hart was not on this one, but there was like at least two other writers, but I did see his name credited somewhere along the way. But it's just Slick talking about
just Slick and Akeem or the
he's
other
talking about
writers.
How he likes to bang ring rats, and sometimes the ring rats talk to the other ring rats and they're like, oh, watch out for Slickster. He's just a jive soul bro. And it's like, what's wrong with being a jive soul bro,
yeah,
baby?
I got one in every town.
Yeah.
You ain't special.
So it's a great song. It's a cool
That's
song.
It's just a really good song. You could tap your toes to.
Mm-hmm.
You could do some weird, like, swirly hand motion dancing to it, which is really good.
Kind of doing that right now.
Yeah.
So that's the lead things off for me.
Okay, that's smart. Jim Johnson's a legend. Recently, you know, given his walking papers by the WWE after a long, illustrious career. So I wanted to put one of his tracks on there, too. And I had to think to myself, like, what's probably my favorite thing that he's ever written? What's the ultimate Jim Johnston composition? And I got to go with Unstable, the ultimate Warriors theme music. There's, you know, Ultimate Warrior. So big, he's the only guy that, like, you know, they kind of tried to put over Hogan after years and years. No, we're just going with Hogan. We're just going with Hogan. We're just going. And like, half of this guy's character was just that music playing and him running. The other half of it was face paint and tassels.
Yeah.
Like this shit that was chugging guitars. You know, just
full speed,
manic
to the
energy.
Ring.
Just like you could play that shit today and like fucking 12-year-olds would jump out of their chair instantly and not even really know why. They just like, in their DNA, they know it's the ultimate
all the
Warriors
little warriors
music.
Floating through the veins.
Like, instantly, that first note, boom. Everybody's up. Everybody's like, holy shit. And where's he going to barrel through? He's going to be running like a bat out of hell. I know it. He's going to knock me over. He's going to knock somebody over. And he's shaking those ropes, man. That's one of the best entrances. Maybe the best entrance when you put it all together.
Yeah.
Like everything he's doing and the music and all that shit.
Anything where the entrance is so over that you're gassed before the match starts.
Mm-hmm. The wrestler and the audience.
Yeah. You spoke about Mr. Jim Johnston. You spoke about an era where as soon as that first note hit, you knew what you were getting into.
It's on,
and
brother.
To me, there were some great instrumental songs from the day.
Sometimes
little more,
you just sit back and
little
listen
more,
to an instrumental track.
A little more classical pieces almost.
Oh, wow.
You had your, you had a legit classical piece and, well, it wasn't classical, whatever, but Ric Flair, Space Odyssey, what's
also
it called? It's like
Struxera.
Also Struxera. Yeah. And then you got Macho Man's Pomp and Circumstance.
That's a great one. List. It hurt.
But then there's one that never existed until Mr. Jim Johnston wrote it.
It probably just stands right there next to those classics.
And that
like
is
it was something that was written hundreds of years ago, that I'd imagine.
Mr. Perfect's I'm Perfect.
A good one.
It's all just a legit orchestra. It's strings, it's timpani,
epic,
it's big, man. And it fits, like, you hear that, like, it just, there's no build-up, it's just right in there with that boom boom.
Whoever's listening to fancy music like this is better than me. I know that for sure.
Hell, you know, I just work a blue collar job and I'm here with my kids, but this man could probably spit his gum out of his mouth and swat it out the air.
Ooh, you see him do that, doggy?
Could you do that?
I could do that probably like 8 out of 10 times, I'd see, as my success rate.
I still do that to this day.
Yeah, I've seen you get it in like women's hair and shit, just like doing that out in crowded places.
Because I know Joke spent like an entire Saturday
you really
practicing
gotta
stop
that. Doing that.
No way. Okay. No way. I also do the toss the towel behind my back and then catch it with the same hand.
Like when you're in the bathroom or?
Anywhere.
I've never seen you carry
matter.
A towel around.
I'm going to start.
Never seen you like
I'm going to start.
Black guy at a wrestling show carrying a towel around with you.
Now, we already said that they're allowed to carry belts. White guys,
absolutely
not allowed to carry belts.
Mm-hmm. That's just a rule.
I think a couple select white dudes could carry towels. I think we could get away with it.
You got to be a pretty big white dude if you're going to get away with carrying a towel around with you everywhere.
But if I'm like just carrying this towel around and just kind of holding it like both hands like I'm better than you and then just tossing it around behind my back, I think I might be able to get away with it in a heel way.
You're definitely not getting away with that.
I'm telling you, I'm getting it over.
The only way you're getting out of it is just like people
see
you.
Music company
like,
in it.
That guy's huge. There's a lot of heat coming off of his body. He needs that towel. I'm glad that he has it. It's better for all of us that he has that towel with him.
Either way, Perfect's entrance was a perfect entrance.
Mm-hmm. It sure was.
What say you?
What say me? I'm going to number two. When I think 1980s music, I'm thinking just like synth sounds. Got to get some of that in there. Got to get that on my 1980s list. There is a few tracks that did good shit like that. But the one I had to go with, the one I had to narrow it down to, is kind of one of the originators of that whole sound. I call this guy the godfather of electronic music, Giorgio Moroder. I gotta go with the theme from Midnight Express, The Chase.
Ooh.
That the Midnight Express came out to.
Ooh, that's a really good one, and I thought about doing that myself.
Kind of dark, kind of menacing, just pulsing with energy, though. Like, just really sets a mood. Real moody track. A lot of just people ripping off shit they heard from like John Carpenter scores and Giorgio Moroder scores and shit of that time, just making this sort of new wavy synthed out sounding shit in the 1980s. And this guy had it done. I think probably Jim Johnston. I would imagine the man responsible for that Jake the Snake theme, Snake Bit. I had a little bit of this going on. I think that was a pretty good sound alike, but. I was thinking about putting that on there, but I had to go with the original, this Midnight Express theme. It's a shame you watch these old matches on the network now, and you're not going to play that entrance because they did not have the rights to be playing that song back in the day. They were like cavemen stumbling around out in the wilderness. They had no idea about music rights or that this shit was all going to go to home video or streaming video or shit later on, and really just, you don't get those Midnight Express entrances anymore, and it was such a big part of their presentation. You'd have Cornette pushing the announcer out of the way and doing his own announcing. You'd have that pulsing, just dark, menacing, just alive music, and you'd just be like, oh, these guys must be big deals. And then you just see them and they were like pudgy white guys, and you're like, oh, maybe they're good when they start wrestling, I'll give them a chance.
But they were always just the Midnight Express.
Yeah, they had those nice shooting stars on their trunks and everything. They really had a nice little package. Put together like a little package.
I got a number one.
Good.
But you said everything there is to say about it.
Oh, wow.
And you even said the name itself.
Oh, wow. You going Snake Bit?
Jake the Snake. Snake bit.
That was on my list for a second, too.
It's, like you said, John Carpenter-esque.
Mm-hmm.
And much in the way that Perfect's theme. Oh, yeah. Just in the same way that Perfect's theme was, in fact, Mr. Perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Snake bit is Jake the Snake, man.
Oh, man.
It was dangerous. It was slithery.
Get what he was coming out to in WCW and when he jumped to them in the 90s, but I bet it just like was not the same.
No.
Just despicably not the same. Like
Snake bit was it. There was a couple versions of it throughout his run in WWF. They changed it ever so slightly.
I never noticed.
I think later on there's like a bassier version, which is kind of cool, but
Snake-hissy
it's just like
sounds.
Him talking over it like, do you trust me? Do you trust me?
That's crazy. Like
I think he was
that
like,
when he like turned heel and him and the Undertaker were like locking people in coffins.
Yeah,
and stuff?
I think he was like way into cocaine and like the Bible at that point.
You need something to do your cocaine off
of. Which is kind of cool.
Like, not the page of a Bible.
Pretty cool gimmick where he's like, yeah, everybody knows I do cocaine, but did you know I'm very well read in the Bible?
So can I ask you, have you let Jesus into your heart?
Have you let Jesus into your heart?
Yeah.
And cocaine.
You can trust Jesus.
Into your nose. But it's a cool song, man. It
really
says
like it.
Says what you're getting into. You hear that music, you're like, it's Jake. I don't know whether to be scared or to cheer or to boo.
Mm-hmm.
It's Jake.
I don't know that kind of too. Like, I'm going to put it up there with the Midnight Express theme.
Yeah.
And the third one would be that Alan Parsons Project song they had Ricky Steamboat coming out to that then the Chicago Bulls started using. Yeah, like, you just put those three songs just like on repeat and like
bow,
a little
bow.
You put it in like your Zune.
Yeah.
Just like those three songs and then you put your Zune just
top
on repeat
Zune,
to keep playing them.
Top
and like,
three Zune picks. Yeah.
I could just keep going for hours. Just like whatever I'm doing, just like, I don't know, I'm out running or I'm just like lifting weights or whatever. Just like I'm in the zone.
Yeah.
Don't talk to me. Like that shit's got me going. My number one's a tie. That's unprecedented.
You can't do that.
That's happening right now. You can't stop me.
Oh, okay.
I wanted to get Rick Derringer on the list because you know, in the 1980s,
yeah,
he
Ricky D.
You know, he did so much for 1980s
Ricky
pro wrestling
D.
entrance music. And if you're doing that, you kind of got to go with Hulk Hogan's Real American because it's the most iconic wrestling song of all time.
It's not fair because it's like
the most
the greatest,
widely known
yeah, it's the greatest
wrestling
entrance
song of all
song
time.
Ever, yeah.
I don't even like Hulk Hogan, and that shit gets me jacked up. Hulk Hogan comes out to anything else,
yeah.
He's just like, oh, that's that old guy that people liked. When he comes out to that, it's just like, this guy's a god.
Yeah, I kind of like when he comes out to Voodoo Child.
I thought you were going to say
only because he does the chop it down with the edge of my hand
WCW
bit.
One that he came out to.
No,
with, American
no
Made.
American.
He's American Made. No, that was terrible.
Yeah.
So I had to not leave that out and tie it with my actual favorite, Pain and Destruction. The
is that
Demolition.
Demolition? Yeah.
Demolition entrance music.
Here come the ass.
That shit just stupid, stupid, dumb lyrics that were great, stupid and dumb in a great way.
But just, it's after like 30 seconds of just like rock guitar.
Just drudgier, sludgier, dronier than like anything else you're hearing in the 1980s. Like just real heavy.
Oh, by far.
Real heavy. Perfect for these guys' ground and pound offense. It's just like the musical version of them throwing a guy on the ground and pounding the shit out of him with their fists. Like, Demolition started off as a Road Warriors ripoff and probably should have sunk and burned, but instead they became the hottest thing in WWF, mm-hmm. and God, a big part of that has had to be because their entrance music was so cool. Way cooler, I even think, than Road Warriors coming out to Iron Man. I think that's fair. Big part of why I always liked them better than the Road Warriors. This music is fucking great.
That's why I picked a lot of the stuff I picked. Like, it's cool to have like a really cool popular song, but it's next level when you have a song that was written specifically for you. It's why the fans...
By a legend like Rick Derringer.
Right. It's why the fans love like the Shinsuke Nakamura entrance right mm-hmm. now and why mm-hmm. they love that Bobby Roode glorious music. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like, you go to these independent promotions where they can come out to like a cool rock and roll song that we all know.
Rock and roll!
But then like...
Hoochie Coo!
It's
I come out to...
Oh,
rock and roll! Yeah. We've already talked about this.
Ooh, that could be another one. We already got Atomic Blondes.
Okay, we are.
Where we do nothing but atomic moves.
Yeah, just atomic drops.
Yeah.
With bleached hair.
We got to come out to Blondie's Atomic for that.
No question.
And then we have just our, like, well, our gimmick that's been stolen a million times mm-hmm. over by now, where we're best friends,
where we come
but
out
some
to
people
tattoo?
Think it's gay. And yeah, yeah, we come out to tattoos, not going
to
get us.
To pull that one off. We got to switch up our careers, I think.
I think we're right at the point where Atomic Blondes would work really,
can we
really
just transition
well.
Into that dad rock tag team once we got to start doing lower rent bookings?
Yep.
That's going
to
work
My
out
My hair
is
really thinning by then,
oh,
and I just
man.
Decide to let it grow super long.
Yeah, that's gonna be
great. I got
great.
That Rock and Roll Express look going full
mm-hmm,
stream.
Mm-hmm.
We just got, we're the only people with bandanas and tassels at this point.
So many bandanas.
Rock and roll, hoochie-coo. Only thing lamer would be is if we came out to Slow Ride.
No, we're gonna do the whole Doink the Clown thing where we entrance to Rock and Roll Hoochie-coo and when we win a match, our outro music
slow
is Slow Ride. That's gonna be what sets us apart, man.
That'll be good.
That'll be great.
And you heard it first right here on Baby Oil and Blow. So if any of you independent jobbers steal our shit,
oh,
go
yeah,
fuck shit's yourselves.
Copyrighted, man.
Like, we got lawyers,
how dare
man.
You.
We are deep with lawyers.
You should be ashamed of yourselves.
I tell you what, it started out really rough, but it ended in quite a great way.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd like to take a moment to do a Tony Schiavone,
oh, wow.
Davy Crockett shout out.
Okay.
Good friend of mine that works at the old Cobb County
Correctional Institute.
Officer Hines.
Mm-hmm.
He's a big proponent of the show. He likes it. He likes our stuff. He listens to it.
Shout out to you, Hines.
He's a good man.
Appreciate that.
He was in a bad car accident.
Oh, no.
Yeah, so he's doing all right. He's getting by.
Well soon.
But it's a long road. It's a Dan mm-hmm. Hill long road, just like in Rambo.
Mm-hmm.
But he's going to be there, and he's got our support, and we wish him a speedy recovery. Don't rush it too soon like Brian Pillman did.
No,
you
know? Don't want to come back.
He came back. That ankle wasn't ready.
Order around those prisoners and tell them
no.
they can't take an extra oatmeal cream pie when you're still feeling a little ginger.
You got to show them what hard times all about.
Got to have all your faculties, man.
All about. So speedy recovery, but enough seriousness because mm-hmm. we're not good at that. Back to the Waka Wakas and Giddle Laughs. Where are we at next week?
I'm done with the Waka Wakas and Giddle Laughs.
Yeah?
I'm at the end of my rope. This 1985-1986 pro wrestling.
What?
Get rid of it, man. Toss it.
Whoa.
Just toss it in the trash.
Whoa.
Put this shit in the trash. Next week, we're going to do a Christmas episode. It's going to be nice.
Oh,
it's
going to
be holiday themed. We're going to do the Primetime Wrestling Holiday Special. We're skipping all the way ahead to December 23rd, 1986.
What?
We do some Christmas stuff. After that week, it's actual Christmas, man.
Yeah?
We can't be recording.
No, we
can't be recording. We got families. We're family men.
Shows of families. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We're going to take a bye week. That week, you know, I know you're going to be worried about it. Don't watch any pro wrestling shows that week. Just deal with your family.
I'll probably watch Tribute for the Troops.
Yeah, I always watch. It's a tradition in my family that we all get together and watch
a
Tribute
for the Troops.
For the Troops.
I mean, it was on a week previous, but I got it saved on the DVR.
We're
going to
do that.
Yeah.
We're going to do a holiday special next week. You're going to be okay. We're going to take a break. We're coming back in 2018. We're coming back hot. Time traveling. New year. New year. We're going back 30 years. We're skipping through all this 85-86 shit where they didn't have TV figured out yet. We're starting January 1988. We're skipping ahead, fucking Back to the Future style.
Oh,
like Back to the Future 2 when they go to the future.
Oh, man.
So we got that January 4th will be our first show of 2018. We're going to be doing the World Championship Wrestling from January 2nd, 1988.
Do they get rid of Dave Crockett by then?
They got him stuck in that three-man not-say-anything position with Jim Ross doing lead commentary, so that's going to be a treat.
Bug out.
After that week, that takes us all the way to January 11th, 2018. That episode, we're going to review Saturday Night's Main Event, which also happened on January 2nd, 1988. I remember that night. It was a big night. And I was stuck in my dad's house in BFE, but there was going to be two pro wrestling shows on in one night, and I got to watch them both. We're going to watch them again.
Banner Night in the old Adams
House. Watch him again 30 years later, everybody.
Well, I look forward to plowing through the rest of this crap and then catching up with y'all in the future.
That's going to be nice.
88, I was entering kindergarten.
Oh, wow.
Big things ahead of me.
Yeah, you had a lot of potential back then.
Oh.
Squandered.
Like you wouldn't believe.
Get some eggnog to drink during this next show. That's going to be nice. Get our mouths all milky and...
Yeah.
The whole time we're
recording. I'm going to have to lick your sweat just for a little bit of rehydration.
So dehydrated after you drink all that boozy nog. Oh,
man. Tell you what, I can't wait for it, pal. So find out who's naughty or nice. It's coming at you. Baby oil and blow.